It's part two of the series on Cider Media, and this week I'll be speaking with Kristen Ackerman Bacon. She is the publisher, founder, and editor of Cidercraft Magazine, which is both a hard copy magazine and it comes in digital form too. And they also have a cider competition to boot. We're going to be talking about all that and more in this year episode 283 of Cider Chat. So get your cup ready because there's a lot of great cider news to share with you. Hello, my name is Rhea Wincaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where I speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. In last week's episode 282, we heard from Mary Bingham and Emily Kovich. Mary is the publisher and founder of Cider Culture, and Emily is the editor. And this is part of a series that I'm doing on Cider Media right now to honestly, like I do with a lot of my conversations on Cider Chat, is to inform me too. Because I have a hunch that right now, Cider Media is at a very critical point in the juncture of the life of cider. Without a doubt, we have great cider in the world. It's not just in the U.S. We have it in all these other countries worldwide, and it's only getting better. And the excitement is growing. People are noticing cider. But what we don't have is a lineage behind the history of cider. And lineage in one particular sense, and I kind of use lineage as one who is a practices martial arts. You know, people always ask me, well, you know, what is your lineage in Aikido? And I could go back to the teachers that I've had, and there's different schools of thought within the martial art. Well, that's also true in cider. There's different schools of thought, aren't there? I mean, when you kind of think about it, and if you're not really fully on with cider, you might realize that, well, you know, there's a school of thought of like there's fruit cider, people who just want to work with peri or pore. There's folks who just want to distill cider, and they maybe worked with a great distiller. And there's folks who learned different cider making techniques. Maybe they were based in Michigan, and then they traveled outside of Michigan and set up their own cideries. Or they were based in the Pacific Northwest and traveled outside of that area and now live in California. Or they're in California working with the amazing apples there, and they have their community. And so we have all these like little subgroups of cider. And that is the lineage of one's story, where you learn those techniques and how you bring it forward. You know, for myself, my lineage goes back to, well, West County Cider, the folks who were the first commercial cider makers in the U.S. starting back in 1984, and getting my roots there and getting to know many of the early pioneers of modern day cider today in the U.S. And all that lineage, all our background, will impact the story of cider going forward. And I feel it's absolutely critical that we are supporting Cider Media and shining a spotlight on it so that it will grow and will really entice perhaps you out there right now in Ciderville to think about, you know, I like writing. I'm a good writer. Maybe I've published or I have a diary and I've been writing for years and I want to talk about all the knowledge I've gained about growing apples. We need people in media to hold it because right now it's there's not a lot of us. We need media to stick around to keep lifting cider up. So I could go on and on about this. A lot of thoughts on it. I've already pulled in the keto lineage and stuff, but that's what we're going to be talking about. And this week, I just had a delightful time talking to Kristen. We'll be rolling with that conversation shortly. But first, I have a wee bit of news from Ciderville. So go fill your glass and we'll be right back.
Walking through the orchards.
Like all media, Cider Chat welcome sponsors. So when the Northwest Cider Association asked to be a sponsor of this here podcast, I was absolutely delighted. Of course, that's fantastic. I love helping to promote the regions of British Columbia, Idaho, Montana, Washington, and Oregon. Incredible apple growing regions, amazing people. It's a foodie paradise. So let's hear from Emily right now. She's going to be telling us about a very specific apple. She's been doing these like little commercials for the association, and I just adore it. So I'm going to hand it over to you, Emily, and let's hear what is in the cider box and help you get these ciders to the people who are just so thirsty for this region of the world.
Emily Ritchie here. I'm the executive director of the Northwest Cider Association, supporting 100 cideries across the Pacific Northwest. We recently launched the Northwest Cider Club to make it easy to drink in the Pacific Northwest. Get insider access to our Northwest cider scene. We ship hard-to-find, expertly curated ciders from up to 10 different producers, all in one box, quarterly. When we dive deep into cider, we always end up in the orchard. Our upcoming shipment focuses solely on apples. Have you ever heard of the opal apple? Opal apples are actually grown exclusively at one farm in southeastern Washington state. This is the only orchard in the entire U.S. that grows opals, making this variety extremely unique. They're the first U.S. apple variety to be verified by the Non-GMO Project, the only independent verification in North America for non-GMO food. Order our elevated Cider Club box today to taste a 100% single varietal opal apple cider from a very small, hard-to-find cidery called Freewater Cider. They're in northeastern Oregon in a town with only 7,000 residents. The cider is a faint opalescence in color and has intense aromatics of pineapple, Asian pear, and lychee on the nose. Its rich, tropical fruit flavors of star fruit and key lime combined with mild acidity provide for a lingering and refreshing finish. This cider is unfiltered, it's barrel-aged, and it has no added sugar. Become a core part of the cider community and connect with other cider enthusiasts from across the U.S. by joining the Northwest Cider Club. Enjoy the fact that not only are you drinking delicious ciders, but supporting small farms and businesses across the Northwest. Learn more at nwciderclub.com/podcast.
So now you know that opals aren't just a stone that you wear on your earring or on a ring. It's an apple. How cool is that? And I was looking on their page. So I put in nwciderclub.com/podcast. And it's really easy to click on, you know, what's in this box. And I did. And I'm on the elevated apple varieties or varietals. And the key to know right now, Ciderville, is that you want to sign up by August 18th. So the clock is ticking because this podcast is going out on August 4th, not April 4th. And that means you only have a little bit of time here to sign up for this amazing box. So you want to get it in today while you're listening to it. You know, stop the podcast, press pause, put a little note, send a text to yourself or a little email. That's what I do to do reminders to sign up for this. You're going to put in nwciderclub.com/podcast, or as I like to say, nwciderclub.com/podcast. And remember, by supporting these local makers and supporting the Northwest Cider Association and getting cider, you in turn are actually also helping to support Cider Chat. Up next is part two of our series on cider media, and we're featuring Cidercraft Magazine. My conversation is with Kristen Ackerman Bacon, and she'll be telling us a little bit about her role at this online and hard copy magazine for cider enthusiasts and folks in the cider trade.
I am the publisher and owner, and I started Cidercraft, I was just looking at 7 years ago, which is just totally blows my mind. I have been in the publishing world for over 20 years. I started with some luxury real estate publications and then worked for another magazine called The Rob Report, which is a ultra, ultra high end, you know, magazine for gazillionaires. And so I kind of got the publishing bug back then and had a custom publishing company with a couple other business partners and still work with them a little bit today and they do their thing, but really wanted to kind of start something that was like back in my community and really getting back to, you know, one-on-one with these really cool producers. And I grew up in Eastern Washington, which is kind of the grape capital of Washington. And so I've always kind of, you know, inadvertently been involved in the beverage industry since I was young with my dad. So I have been very passionate about all beverages. I love cider, but I also love wine and beer and everything. And I just, there really wasn't a publication for the Pacific Northwest at the time that was really covering all craft beverages. And so that's kind of how I got started with SIP. We actually celebrated our 10-year anniversary last year. We're going to have a huge big bash, but the big bash was the pandemic. So we're hoping to do something this year. But and what happened with CiderCraft is that I have been speaking at CiderCon, just, you know, doing some of the media sessions. And James Cone of Wandering Angus was always like, you should start a cider magazine. I was like, yeah, right. That's like just, that's it wouldn't have happened back then. And then literally fast forward like a year, we were like, if we don't do this, somebody else is going to do it. And we have been covering cider extensively in our SIP magazine for, you know, was like 5 years at that point. And so we really felt we had a good handle on it and wanted to do it right. Meaning that there's so many misconceptions of cider, you know, it's, I just get it all the time. Like, especially back then, oh, it's just a sweet drink. I don't like cider. And I just felt we wanted to go very much the education route with the publication and not just reviews and, you know, recommendations, but really talking to the cider makers and talking about methodologies of like, you know, how they produce their cider and really kind of digging deep. And so that's how it came to be. And we're still around. Yay.
Yeah, seven years is no, you know, it's a lucky number for sure.
Yep. By the way, I am at my house, so we do have some neighbor dogs, and that's just how this happens these days. So
yeah, that is so classic cider. There's like an orchard dog or there's, you know,
totally,
something or birds flying overhead. That's an ambiance that we love. So you have this background in with wine. Does your family make wine? Is that part of it or?
No, my dad actually insured a majority of the vineyards growing up. And so I was kind of always tromping through the vineyards and I, you know, I was tasting and sampling wine since, you know, a pretty young age and just kind of got a bug for it. I mean, I was that person in high school that was drinking like craft beer and not, you know, natural light when we were all at the Kegers. So I've just kind of refined my palate over the years. And I think cider was just kind of a natural transition. I didn't know too much about it before we started going to CiderCon and it just kind of opened up a whole world. And I think that, you know, I think beer gets compared to cider a lot, but I really think that, you know, it's definitely made more like wine. So
over the course of that 7 years, And James that you talked about at one point, he was the executive or the president of the United States Association of Cider Makers, which is now the ACA, American Cider Maker Association. So at that time, cider in the Pacific West, Northwest, it was like how big? What was like the number of cideries that you were seeing at that time compared to today?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, you know, there's some that have been around for, you know, like 15, 20 years. And I would say that that was probably about a handful of them. When we started, there was really about, I would say maybe 10 kind of players in the Pacific Northwest cider game. Mm-hmm. And I think, gosh, I want to say they're up to like 50 or 60 in the Northwest now. So it's grown quite considerably.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, quite the arc that we've seen just in the past 3 years.
Just as like any other place in the country that like has or had orchards for hundreds of years, like everybody's actually been making hard cider for a long time. It's just a matter of who kind of broke into it more commercially. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you make cider at all?
I do not. I did try my first batch and it did not go so well. It's actually a pretty funny story. We went on a press trip to an apple orchard in Yakima and we pressed our own fresh organic juice and had the gallons in the trunk of my car. And by the time we got back to Seattle, I honestly had forgotten about them. And it was in the middle of summer. And so a couple days later, I pop open my trunk and everything had exploded. There were fruit flies everywhere. It was an absolute disaster. So I always like to say, I'm going to leave that in the hands of people who make it well already, and I will just imbibe on it. So
I am sorry to hear that first experience. Wow. Only imagine what a mess.
I have all the equipment from an actual photo shoot that we did for a cover photo shoot for one of the issues of Cider Craft on Home Cider Making. So I have all the carboys. I have like all of the stuff. It's just sitting there. And I'm just a little timid to kind of dip my toes in the water again. But I do have one Dabinette apple tree in my front yard. And last year it produced 23 apples. So I was very excited about that.
Perfect. Boy, that's choice apples. You might be able to, you know, do some type of barter with one of the local makers.
Totally.
You have a certain vantage point and what you're working with, and you're now going worldwide. Let's talk about the magazine itself and the publishing cycle. Specifically, who's your target audience that you're looking at?
Well, this is really interesting because originally when we started the publication, it was very, 100% was going to be consumer focused, education based, like really kind of just getting the word out about cider. And then as it evolved, we realized that every cider maker in the country and world were reading the publication. And so it kind of, it showed us that we needed to slightly adjust our editorial content to also speak to cider makers and do, you know, get a little more nerdy with some of the content as far as like, you know, our current issue has a story on co-fermenting and things like that. So it's evolved and we definitely like try to keep a really good mix. I would say probably like 80% consumer driven and then 20% really kind of more for the trade. And originally when we started, we were publishing just 2 print issues a year. And it's extremely expensive to publish a magazine. I think like, you know, that's what everybody's like, oh, well, you know, I love print. Well, we love print too, but you know, there is a lot of financial, you know, obstacles around print. So we were doing 2 print issues a year. And then when COVID hit, we had just published an issue that came out in February. That was right when CiderCon was happening. And so once the COVID hit, obviously, basically this happened with our other magazine. Majority of all of our distribution was not available to us at that point because people didn't want to have magazines in their tasting rooms and people didn't want to have printed material that people were, you know, touching. And so that was really tough for us because it's not a matter of, at that point, like you have a very large investment into going into the print. And if you can't distribute the 25,000 copies that we publish, you know, we're really in the hole. So we pivoted and I think we published 4 digital versions of the magazine over 2020. And so at this point right now, we're doing 2 digital issues, full issues a year, and then we'll have 1 annual print issue that'll come out in January, which will coincide with CiderCon. It'll be our big cider awards, and we'll be putting a lot more content into that issue than we generally have before, and it'll kind of act as like an annual magazine that gets distributed all year round.
It's interesting to hear your strategy coming out of COVID or into COVID because it really, certainly in the print, and that is so critical. People didn't want to touch stuff. We didn't know.
Right. Yeah. Wow. And it was tough because we just had so many subscribers like, you know, are you guys going to do print again and print? And we want to, and we definitely feel like there's a value. It's print for me has always been that thing where I disconnect from my computer, which I'm on, you know, 8 hours a day. It's the one thing I can sit back. I can be at the pool. I can be on the patio. I can be sitting there and you really like engage with the content more. And so there will always be a print version of the publication, but there is a lot going on in the cider industry. And I always say like, online content is timely, print is timeless. So like print is always going to be in this annual issue. It's going to be something that you can always pick up, like, you know, 2 years later, and it'll still be relevant. Whereas like online, we can put out the press releases and, you know, new releases that people have or openings and things that generally wouldn't go into an annual print edition.
So I'd like to get back to like the audience piece. Because I mean, I definitely hover in that same place too, because I think that there's so little cider media in the world versus the wine world has, you know, bloggers like, I don't know, a Santa Claus stocking, you know, on the wall. It's like overflowing with so many different options on the media. But in cider, we're a very small community. And so I wonder, since you straddle both the wine and the cider world, do you do that in your other publication with your audience there? Would you say it's the same breakdown of, you said 80% consumer and 20% trade, or is that totally different?
It's totally different. Honestly, we don't do a lot of trade content at all with SIP because, like you said, there are so many different facets of media for wine and for beer. They have, you know, their own trade publications and everything. And so we felt that our value was really in speaking just to consumers for SIP. But Cider Craft is just a different beast, you know, and at some point we might have just a you know, annual issue that's just for cider makers. That's all things, you know, equipment. What's the latest stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a hard one to play because most of the folks who are consumers, many of them become cider makers and want to become commercial makers, which I think is really parallel to the whole craft beer movement that you saw early on. All the fans were electrified to go out and do their own breweries or nano breweries.
Totally. And we actually see that we have about 23,000 people on our newsletter. And I definitely have like a separate newsletter list that's just cider makers. And then I have one that's for consumers. But at the end of the day, like when I look at the consumer list, there are still probably 10,000 on there that are home cider makers or cideries in planning. So, you know, it's been interesting because I feel like cider is the one beverage during the whole pandemic that has really kind of stayed its course. Like, I mean, there hasn't been a huge drop. I haven't really heard of a lot of cideries going out of business, which has been great, which I have definitely seen in the other categories a lot more. And maybe it's just because there's not as many cideries as there are wineries and breweries, but it seems promising.
We have lost a couple cideries, sadly, but nothing like we're seeing in the craft beer scene, that they're kind of dropping like flies, sadly. That's what I think is so unique about this category, is that it's so wide open. Right now, the cider media is kind of creating the story for and the history of it in tandem with all the commercial makers and fans. But I'm kind of wondering, for you, when you're looking at the consumers, where are you trying to bring them?
You know, we wanted to be able to publish a magazine that was like, you know, 80 pages of content, which, I always joke, like, you can only put an apple on cover so many times. You know, cider is very, like, unfortunately, like, ingredients wise, it's very one dimensional, you know? And so, like, what we wanted to do is really kind of show the breadth of like what cider can be. And so every issue includes like a profile or a Q&A with a maker, you know, some sort of like travel, like specific article. We always give reviews and recommendations. Like we do a buying guide every issue where we will, we pick three different categories. So this issue is Kingston single varietal Kingston blacks, island flavors, and cherry ciders. And so I send out a call for submissions to all the cideries and say, if you have this, submit it. We get together a group of judges and we blind taste through everything. We pick the top six. So it's giving like not blind recommendations, because we're really like taking the time to evaluate these and really find like the styles that are true to the style guidelines. In addition to recommendations, like we do always do an article called Spiked, which is cider cocktails. And we want to and that's another thing, just getting people like outside the box with cider. Cider makes great cocktails too. And people don't really think about that all that often. And so I think it's just like really just like, we're never going to do just one buying guide of just all ciders here, try them. You know, like, we want to talk about, like, we talk about botanical ciders, like, why cideries, like, decide to use botanicals in there. And then here are a few recommendations to try based on the kind of, you know, the totality of that article. Cool. We really try to cover as much as possible. And I think that's the thing, is just trying to not make cider so one-dimensional.
And there's so much to cover, isn't there, Crystal?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like over the top, which again is the excitement of it. From my vantage, is like, wow, no other beverage in the world right now has the possibilities that cider has. The story is being written as we speak, versus for wine, I think it's a little bit different.
But. And one thing, and let me just mention that I forgot, we always do a pairing story or cooking with cider too. And I think that's like a really huge part of it too, is that, you know, like, wine has always had those, you know, pairings. You know, you could Google wine and cheese pairings and you're going to find everything. And that's another thing, is that cider is also super food friendly. And so, like, getting people to maybe say, like, okay, I'm going to have a dinner party, but I'm going to pair everything with cider versus wine, is just kind of getting them to kind of think outside the box that way.
Mm-hmm. So, being such a wine fan, I don't want to kind of put you.
I'm an everything fan. I am an equal opportunist when it comes to beverages.
All right. I hear you.
I haven't got on the seltzer, you know, wagon yet, though. It's just not there for me. So
that's okay. You're speaking to the choir here on that one.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, there's only so much you could drink, so you might as well put your consumption in the right direction if you want to go there.
Life is too short to drink something bad.
You said that you're publishing right now, if I'm getting this correct, because it sounds like it's changed. So one, there's going to be one hard copy per year. That'll be coming out at the beginning of the year, because that's when CiderCon takes place. And then two, digital.
Yep. So the current one just came out, a week ago.
Yeah.
And you can download that on our website for free right now. So right now we are kind of letting everybody just consume as much content as possible. We are creating a really cool hybrid model of the subscription now, which will be available later this week. I'm not sure when you're airing this, but we will drop that in at some point. But it's going to be, you know, a subscription is going to include the two digital versions of the magazine that come to your inbox, the print edition, and four virtual tastings a year. So those will be like either education based, or we will include some sort of kit that you can, you know, buy to taste along with us. So you'll get a lot of value. I mean, that's the one thing, like, going back to like my old publishing days, like, it is so weird. Like, we worked on a magazine for 3 months. We sent it to the press. Then it went off to subscribers. Then you start working on the content for the next edition. Well, now in media, we have print, which has separate content. Our online is totally separate content. And all of our social media outlets are totally separate content. So you're actually managing like 10 different channels for one publication, which is just like, it's mind blowing. So I always say, like, yes, you can see the magazine, but like, there's so many other things that we publish on the website and totally different on social media too. So we are pushing out as much cider content as humanly possible at this point.
Folks could get the digital copy, which is separate content, you're saying, than the hard copy.
Yeah. And it's literally just, it's just looks exactly like the magazine. It's a flip magazine. It's the same, you know, separate editorial. It's just not in physical hard copy.
Mm-hmm. And so that goes online for free. And then at a certain point, it's like behind a paywall.
No, it's okay. Not right now. That is probably something we are going to be looking into, but not so much a paywall, but more of like a subscriber access. And so I always say, like, if you can, sign up for our newsletter, because we do send out a newsletter twice a month. That's all the online original content that we publish. Because, you know, the Facebooks and all those things, those algorithms, they, as a business, they just push us off. And so a lot of people don't see that. And so the way to be able to get as much cider news as possible from us is to subscribe to our newsletter. And you can do that on the website too.
Yep. It's a good thing to do. You subscribe to the newsletter And then to get an actual subscription,
that will be online. You just go to the website, cidercraftmag.com, click on subscribe, and the subscription will be on there and you can purchase it right there.
Perfect. So you have this team of writers happening. You got a group that you're working. You're based in Washington State. You're in Seattle. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. And but you're, you know, working as many magazines do with like writers around the world. How can writers get involved? Folks who are like kind of hankering and they got a good story.
Please reach out to us. I mean, that's like the biggest thing. It is the hardest thing to find. Like good cider journalists. I mean, it's just because like not a lot of people really specialize just in that, which is fine if they do other beverages too, because honestly, it's a very, I mean, if you know one beverage, you know how to write about another one if you're pretty passionate about it. So just email into us. You can go onto the website and message us direct from there, or you can email me directly at publisher@cidercraftmag.com. Send us a pitch. If you have a story idea, we'd love to hear about it. Generally want to know that you do have some previous writing history, because there's a lot of people that reach out that just want to do this for fun and they like cider, but there's definitely, you know, we want to make sure that it's still written in a way that's educational and informative and, you know, gives value to the consumers.
So I guess if you're a new writer starting out and you've been in the cider community for a while and you probably do have some skills, we're going to give people, you know, the best leg up there. It might be a good idea that they send in a little bit of a writing sample too, if they're going to be sending.
Would love that. Right. Yep, absolutely. Yeah, if you have any clips or anything from previous stories that you've had published, even online, obviously a lot of things are online these days. So yeah, just include that when you send it in. Mm-hmm. And give us like, you know, a solid pitch. You know, some people are just like, oh, I just really love dry ciders. Can I, you know, write a story about it? But why about dry ciders? You know, like what's the shtick, you know? So, but yeah, we are open, always open to people pitching us.
When you make it look so easy, it's hard to imagine like what actually goes in there, right?
Right. Totally. And that's the thing. It's like once it comes in, even all the web stories go through our editor, go through fact checking, copy editing. I mean, it's not something that you can just submit a story already written and we just throw it up on the website. We want to make sure that it's like it's in the voice of Cider Craft and kind of follows our ethos of, you know, how we want to be portrayed.
Let's talk a little bit about the cider competition that you do.
We have been actually doing these awards for Sip Magazine for 10 years. We're actually just about to do our 10th annual, and we've always included cider in that competition. And so it was kind of a natural fit. There's only Glencap, which is obviously well-respected. We love what they do. They are kind of the, you know, the original OGs of cider competitions, but we do it a little bit different. And we always have, we always kind of say, we're not the little league of cider wine competitions. You don't just get a participation medal just, you know, for submitting. So the way that we do it is everything gets submitted based on specific categories of cider. And the categories that we've kind of, we follow the guidelines of the American Cider Association. We also, you know, work kind of with Glencap on their categories and things. And we've also identified a few additional categories that we feel. So they get all submitted. We have a big group of judges that gets together once a year. It usually takes about 2 days to get through the ciders. Last year we had 500 ciders submitted from all over the world, which was absolutely amazing, especially during COVID. We did this competition, which was so insane. The culmination is basically all published in our annual awards issue. And so it's platinum, double gold, gold, and silver. And then that's, I mean, basically it. We wanted, and that's the thing that we did with our other competition, is we want to find the very best. We don't want to just say, okay, this is a, you know, 75 points, or we didn't want to go that whole wine route. We just basically wanted to give consumers and say, listen, these are the top four in this specific category. Get them, you know, go find them. So it's kind of like we build this like shopping list for you for the whole year of all these different ciders to try. And it's so fun. Like even like, I mean, and I keep going back to sip because it's just like, there's like in the wine category, we don't say like, okay, over 25 or under 25, best, you know, Chardonnay over 25, under 25, because that's where you find like the little gems, you know, like we had a $10 Chardonnay from Washington win over like longtime producers, you know, that were like $50 bottles of Chardonnay. And I love finding those little gems. And even with cider craft, like a lot of these people don't even package. And I always like, there, some of our consumers, like our readers are like, oh, but you feature this, but we can't get it, you know? And, but I think that we always want to champion the small producers, you know, and whether you can't get it shipped to you directly, if you're in the area, you now know, like, this is one of those spots that I have to visit. So we don't want to exclude anyone. We do say in the requirements that essentially, like, when you submit the cider, it has to be available like 3 months after that published date. So at least if somebody does want to get it, they can get it. And thanks to Vino Shipper, like during this whole time, they've really created this amazing online shipping program for cideries that have never packaged before. So the amount of cider and the, you know, the array of cider that we can get online shipped to us direct to our door now is absolutely insane. It's awesome.
Just kind of finishing this up, one of the key topics for makers is, you know, people feeling out of the loop, not being able to get their great cidery in the news. So do you have a couple tips for producers looking to get coverage for their product and maybe their own story?
We can't write about what we don't know. And unfortunately, even though we do have writers all over the country, it is hard to get out there and just try to find every single gem that's out there. Sending in an email at first, you just to like introduce your cidery to us. And then at that point, like if it's something that you package and that you can get to us, we definitely will request samples. And I always say, don't send us everything you have, because there's some cideries that are producing like 25 different ciders. Like, send us specifically the cider that is kind of your flagship to start, and then maybe a cider that you're really excited about, or maybe it's something experimental that you're doing that nobody else is doing, something that'll kind of make you stand out. And we will taste it all. I mean, that's the thing. And that's where we get to be able to, like, if we don't have room, you know, to put it in the actual magazine, we'll do a social review. We've got a great social media following. We have done a partnership deal with Cider Scene. And Cider Scene are these wonderful twin brothers in the Midwest. And we actually met them a couple of years ago at CiderCon, and we just loved their enthusiasm and like what they were trying to do with their brand. And it's very different than what we do. We found that we absolutely can join forces and reach a broader audience together in, you know, working together to share content and doing these like events online and, you know, maybe doing events in person at a specific point. But basically, Cider Scene has a huge social following because they have a much younger audience. They're reaching the people that are just getting into cider or cider curious, or, you know, and so they have a very different voice. Whereas we just did a reader survey, and majority of our readers have been drinking cider 20 plus years. So that audience right there is just so different. You know, they're not looking for the funsy, you know, whatever, but like, if we can combine forces, then it's just, you know, we really want to be a great voice for the cider industry in all aspects, whether you're a brand new cider drinker or you've been drinking cider for 50 years, you know.
And that is Trevor and Nolan O'Malley.
They're wonderful. And my business partner is my sister, my older sister. And so we kind of think of it as, this is a fun little family affair. We very well know what it's like to work with family. And so I think it's a really fun dynamic. And we've had so much fun just even like putting together this partnership. So I think there will be a lot of really fun online things that like I think are just going to be better with both of our voices.
I hope this conversation with Kristen Ackerman Bacon inspired you to check out CiderCraft Magazine today. Just go to CiderCraftMag.com. There'll be links in the show notes to CiderCraft Magazine in this year, episode 283 of Cider Chat. Good conversation always makes me feel hopeful. And certainly a little bit of fun music in the background helps too. And it kind of gets me into the mood for sharing with you a little email that came in from Eric at Zydeco Meadery. He writes, "Hi, Rhea. We met almost 2 years ago at Cider Days. You walked past my mom and I while we were talking to the lady holding a flag with the words Pomona Rising." Well, Eric, you know, I kind of looked into that, and you were definitely talking to Judith Maloney, who is the Queen Pomona herself. It was she and Terry Maloney who really helped launch Modern Cider at the time, back in 1984, the first and only commercial cidery in the U.S. at that time. It's just kind of wild, isn't it? So good for you. Anyways, he continues on with, "I'd like to say thanks very much for this podcast. I listen to it while I'm at work and while I'm on the road driving to sell mead at the farmer's market in Wichita, Kansas. It was because of your podcast that I learned about Franklin County Cider Days in 2019. How New England and New York are the Napa Valley of American cider cultivation. And equally important, I purchased English bittersweet apples from the nice folks at Black Diamond Cidery in Trumansburg, New York." Well, oh man, that just is so sweet, because Ian, who is the cider maker at Black Diamond, I mean, he was a department head of pomology at Cornell for so many years. So you picked a good place to get some apples for sure, Eric. You go on with, "Although I specialize in mead manufacturing in the state of Kansas, I have planted a tiny 29 apple tree orchard at home in Kansas City, Missouri, using trees from Maine, New York, and North Carolina. Many, if not all, of the orchard owners I purchased from were interviewed on your podcast." Whoa. "I have also incorporated New York fruit in my Kansas cider I produced commercially last year. I have plans to use more New York and New England fruit in various 2021 sizers." Woo-woo, love hearing that. "Your podcast has made this former Bostonian nostalgic for home, because I wish I had access to all the great fruit Massachusetts produces." Man, that is so... I kind of needed to hear that today, so thank you very much, Eric. That's really kind of you to write that. He continues with, "As long as my kids are tolerant of long road trips and my mom and grandmother still live in Boston, I'll find a way to continue to transport fruit and juice back to Kansas. I always have good kudos and sing praises to New England apple farmers, and I have you to thank for the exposure. Keep up the great work." Well, I'm feeling a little teary-eyed here, Eric, a little teary-eyed. Your email couldn't have come in on a better day. I really appreciate it. And if you want to find out more of what he is doing at Zydeco Meadery, which you gotta love, check it out. Just go to Zydeco Meadery. Zydeco is spelled Z-Y-D-E-C-O meadery.net. And it's kind of interesting. You're the second mead person I've heard from, you know, recently just heard from Sebastian, based in Germany. So there is a lot of crossover, isn't there, in the fine world of fermenting. And it's, you know, it's great, because the door is always open to all, certainly in our special spot of Ciderville. Thanks again for writing, and best of luck. Keep us posted on the orchard and all that you're doing. So I hope, Ciderville, that left you as happy as I am, which is one of the reasons why I love posting the Cider Chat episodes on Wednesday of each week, because it makes the weekend a little bit closer to the last one you just left. Look, I'm always looking for all the fun out there. Speaking of fun, you should know, if you have heard of the app called TikTok, it's a social media app. There's a bunch of postings now from my recent Ciderfield road trip to New York and Pennsylvania. I think probably by the time this goes live, there'll be like part 6 or 7 up, perhaps. I've been like rolling out little daily posts of the tour, snapshots that I took that I won't really be including in on the audio portion of those episodes when they do go live. So you might want to check that out if you enjoy seeing a little bit of the behind the scenes. I didn't get any windshield wipers, I don't think, up there yet from my amazing 1997 van. But you could check that out at TikTok. I'm on there at Cider Chat. And always, as a reminder to all of you out there in Ciderville, if you find this podcast worth your time and valuable info coming your way, then do consider donating today to Cider Chat, becoming a sponsor, joining the Cider Chat Patreon page like so many amazing people out there in Ciderville do. It really helps keep the podcast afloat, and I couldn't do it without all of you. So check it out. You could go to ciderchat.com, find the donate button, and also find a link to the Patreon page. It's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And can you believe it? It's already August. Oh my goodness. This month is going to be a little wonky for me. The tail end of it, I'm traveling. So I got to keep on rolling along and tidying up things here before I hit the road. So at this juncture, I'm going to leave you here until next week. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like palms. We love orchards. And having fun, there is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider. We like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There's a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!